This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
It is Friday night. We're getting you ready for Super Bowl 54 that will feature one of the league's most explosive offenses against one of the most dominant defenses. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. It's going to be an amazing ride, an amazing 2 hours, and we want to hear from you. You can join us at Twitter, at eRadio Sports, info, eRadioSports.com, podcastarena.com. Delighted to have with us, taking us through the fastest 2 hours in radio, and that's my boy, Robert Harris Jr. Give him a follow on Twitter at Robo Harris Jr. And Bobby, so much anticipation for this big game. The stage is set. Tell us this, with so many different storylines, what are you looking forward to the most?
I'm looking for like the offense, the top offense versus the top defense. Like you mentioned before, I mean, the Chiefs offense is very explosive. Second quarter, after the Houston Texans went up 24-0, then the Chiefs come back 28-24, and then a 31-7 rout to finish off the game. It's just unbelievable that the Chiefs did it not once with the Texans, but they did it against the Titans. And the 49ers, on the other hand, their defense, oh my goodness, domination against Minnesota, domination against Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers.
For sure. Absolutely. You know, let's back up a moment. Talk to me about, as far as the Chiefs, we addressed this a little bit last week, as far as with them getting off to a slow start, diagnose what's been going on and perhaps going forward into this game, what kind of corrections need to take place? Because you can't get off to a slow start in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you can, because the stage is higher. The pressure is much, much higher. But I just think they just try to do a little bit too much early on, drop passes, bad calls, bad missing assignments, and then they settle down. I don't know. This team just settled down in the second quarter of every game. So I think that's what's needed to be happening. Like, okay, this is the Super Bowl, but at the end of the day, this is just a football game.
Okay, so when we talk about Kansas City and San Francisco, between these two teams, I mean, their fans want them to get win the Super Bowl, but who was under more pressure to win?
I think the Chiefs, because of Andy Reid. I mean, he's haven't been to the Super Bowl in 15 years, and he hasn't won one yet. And he's had a illustrious career. But if he wins the Super Bowl, this will be it.
We are set and getting you ready for Super Bowl 54 tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Come on back. We've got an amazing lineup in just a moment.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, Friday night, welcome back. SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. What a great way to kick off our program tonight. We love hearing from all of you at eRadio Sports, info, eRadioSports.com, podcastarena.com, and our friends and partners, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They will help you with your auto repair, maintenance, and restoration projects. They make it all easier. So when your car isn't stopping like it used to, the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts will help you find the brake parts and supplies you need to do the job right the first time. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. We are getting you ready for Super Bowl 54. The stage is set with the 49ers and the Chiefs. So many storylines. We're going to break it all down here in Hour 1, and so delighted to have with us, back with us, playing the NFL for 10 years. He knows a thing or two about defense, and that is Lige Doosable. I love your name. Good evening, Lige. How are you?
I'm good, Lisa. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, it's always so exciting to talk to you, and the excitement continues when we talk about Super Bowl 54. So what gets you fired up the most about this particular matchup?
Well, first and foremost, man, I mean, the Niners, who are near and dear to my heart, because that's why I ended my career 2 years ago. So just having them back in the Super Bowl, you know, historic team, going for championship number 6, I believe, and the record. So that gets me fired up first and foremost. And then just what Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch have been through the last couple of years, for them to bring it all together and keep that team together and have them on the cusp of winning another championship. I'm fired up about that. And then the defensive line play, I mean, a position that I played my whole career. If you look at the 49ers defensive line, the tenacity that they play with, they get after the quarterback and they come in droves. They have like a nice 6-7-man rotation, and they come after you play in and play out. And if you look at the past Super Bowls, if you look at the Giants and when they won their last two Super Bowls, if you look at the Denver Broncos and when they won, teams that ran the football, were able to play good defense and get after the quarterback, have won the Super Bowl. So right now, I would have to say that the arrow is pointing up for San Francisco in this game.
Things are looking very good for the 49ers. They've got a stout opponent in the Chiefs. But take us back to the start of 2019. What was your belief, Lige? Did you think that the 49ers would be one of two teams that are still standing?
Honestly, wholeheartedly, I would say no. I knew they had a chance to get to the playoffs. First and foremost, I knew that division was going to be tough with the Rams coming back, being in the Super Bowl last year. You know, Seattle with Russell Wilson, they always have a chance. But I really felt that San Fran, you know, with Jimmy G getting hurt last year, they really weren't able to build up that continuity. And in 2017, when I was there, when Jimmy came in, we won six in a row. I mean, this guy, his record is one of the best records for a starting quarterback in history for a guy that started for 3 years. I mean, you can't deny his greatness when he's out on that field. He gets the job done. So I knew that everybody really believed in him and the team believed in each other. But I would be lying to you if I said that I automatically thought that they were going to be going to the Super Bowl this year.
It is such a fascinating matchup on so many different levels, from the coaches to the quarterbacks. So you just talked about Jimmy G. Just hit on him real quick. Can he out-duel Mahomes? I mean, Mahomes obviously is getting a lot of attention. He's garnering a lot of attention. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's just crazy to me that Jimmy G hasn't gotten the respect he deserves.
He's
a top-5 quarterback in completion percentage, especially with throwing balls down the field. The thing is, his record, we just spoke about that, what his record is. I believe he only has 5 losses in his career total when he actually started a football game. And the thing is, if you go back to earlier in the season when they went into New Orleans, which is a really hard place to win, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo almost dropped 50 on the New Orleans Saints and outdueled a Hall of Fame quarterback in Drew Brees and got San Francisco the win. So I would say yes, I want to say he can outduel Patrick Mahomes, but I feel like he can go toe-to-toe with him. And if the game comes down to it and they need Jimmy to make a play, I believe he will make a play.
Lige Duzibel with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, former defensive lineman in the NFL, played for a total of 8 teams. His final team that he played for was the 49ers. So I'm going to ask you this question. Who do you think deserves the most credit on the 49ers making the Super Bowl this year?
It's a hard question to really answer. I mean, there's just so many components that goes into it. You look at the run game, it's one of the best in the NFL. And it's not just one running back. It's 3 different running backs they use. But Raheem Mostert has been kind of like the bell cow going down the stretch of the season. The offensive line, they were banged up a little bit, but they've been all together for the last 5 or 6 weeks. And they've played really well and meshed really well together. But if I would have to give the credit to anybody, I mean, I talked about a defensive line earlier. It would have to be Kyle Shanahan. I mean, the way he was able to keep that team together, especially after 2 years of not, you know, going to the playoffs. I mean, we went 6-10, and I believe they won 4 games last year. But for him to have everybody still believing and to keep that team together, and they've dealt with a lot of injuries, but they fought through all that adversity, and now they're on the cusp of winning a Super Bowl. I mean, I would have to say it's a tie between John Lynch, who brought the pieces in there, and Kyle Shanahan, for putting those pieces to the best use. He's got everybody doing what they do well. He really doesn't ask people to do stuff they don't do well. Everybody on that offense and defense is doing exactly what they really do well. And that's the thing about a football team. If you got players on your team and you stick to doing what they do well, you can have success. When you put people out of position is when you have trouble and you can't really be successful.
Perhaps provide some insight tonight, your time around Kyle Shanahan. What's he like?
Oh, man, one of the smartest offensive minded coaches I've been around. The guy is all time, man. I mean, it's just as far as like X's and O's, he knows exactly. And it's just mismatches, man. He knows how to get the defense lined up to where he wants it to be lined up. That way he can run the play he wants to run, because he's all about mismatches in his offense. He figures out what coverage you're in and he undresses you before the snap. And that way, he can get the one-on-ones where he wants to get them. And then in the run game, the way he sets up the run game is just amazing, because he throws so many motions. I've never seen a coach throw so many motions at an opponent. You never know where a guy's going to motion, where a guy's going to shift from. And then I get you thinking on defense. You know, when guys move around, you know, there has to be some communication from the linebackers to the D-line to the back end, and that can kind of get you off your game. But he throws motions at you almost every single play. And a lot of the times it's just to get guys out of position to run the football, which they have been one of the best, if not the best team, doing that in the NFL this year.
Lee J. Jusable with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show, former defensive lineman in the NFL. And, you know, when I look at both of these teams on paper, I mean, they both have quarterbacks that really don't have, like, that big game experience. How much does, like, say, a veteran coach for the Chiefs like Andy Reid, but, you know, just, and I think of veteran players for the 49ers, how much will that play a difference in a role in helping the quarterbacks, you know, minimize their anxiety and helping them to get comfortable, Lee J.?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's something like the Super Bowl. I will say that the 49ers probably have a leg up just because Jimmy has been to so many Super Bowls.
Okay.
Even though he wasn't the starting quarterback, he knows the routine. He knows that halftime is going to be a little bit longer. He knows after they come in, after warming up, it's going to be a little bit longer. He's been through this process before. So I would have to give the edge in the quarterbacks to in that department to Jimmy Garoppolo just because he's been through this process multiple times. Not just one time. He's been through it multiple times. But the thing about Patrick Mahomes, he's so even killed. I mean, the guy, first year starting, went to the AFC Championship and was one drive away from going to the Super Bowl. So it's never too high or never too low for him. But still, I would give the edge to Jimmy Garoppolo just because he's been through this process before.
Hey, we're running out of time. You just talked about Patrick Mahomes. Are you surprised just how quickly he's been able to have success? I mean, he's, what, the fifth youngest quarterback ever to start in a Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, after last year, nothing surprises me with this kid. I mean, no-look passes, throwing ropes on the run for 70 yards. I mean, this guy can do it all. He is the modern-day Houdini, and he's a creative player. He is what we call a creative player in Madden for guys that play video games. This guy is literally, he was formed in the lab. Because some of the stuff he's doing on a football field, you shouldn't legally be able to do. I mean, just the way he carries himself. And you can tell that the team feeds off of it and his confidence. If you look at the playoff game when they were down, I believe, what, 21, 24, nothing to Houston, he never wandered. He kept his team in the game. He kept the offense and the whole team in the game. He kept telling them, let's make one play at a time, dig ourselves back into this game. And sure enough, before halftime, they were already back in that game. That just shows the leadership that this guy brings in day in and day out. And guys feed on that in the team. And everybody has that confidence. And they feed off it from your leader, your quarterback.
It is going to be an epic matchup. Super Bowl 54, as I said earlier, it's going to feature the league's most explosive offense and one of the most dominating defenses ever. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Lee J. Jusable has been with us, former defensive player in the NFL. Always a true pleasure. It's way too long. We want you back again real soon. Thank you so much, Lee J.
Thank you so much for having me on again.
Of course. Much more coming your way. The next generation of sports radio, SB Nation Radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour one, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Many different ways to connect. You can join us online at Twitter, at eRadio Sports Info, eradiosports.com, and Twice Is Nice, podcastarena.com. We always like to pause, recognize the folks that make it happen at SB Nation, and that is O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think of them for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low, low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. We're bringing you a lot of coverage tonight, Super Bowl 54. It is going to continue, but right now we're going to shift gears a bit. We're going to power down in our next segment. We are going to focus on the life and legacy of Kobe Bryant, who died tragically in a helicopter crash this past week. We have invited back to the show Roland Lazenby, and few writers know more about Kobe Bryant's life than Roland. He is a basketball historian, and we're going to have him join us this evening. And good evening, Roland. It's good to have you on the program. I know you've had about, 5 days, you know, to process this heartbreaking news. First of all, how are you doing?
I'm fine, E. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Doing good. You know, just so many emotions that go through your mind when you hear just such, you know, of the tragic death of Kobe Bryant. How did you learn about it, and what was your immediate reaction to the news?
George Mumford, the mindfulness guru of the Bulls, the team psychologist who later worked with the Lakers, I introduced him to Kobe back in the 90s when Kobe was really struggling, and he became one of the top figures in Kobe's life. He texted me. TMZ had just messaged him, and he thought it was a sick joke, but we know now it's not.
Well, when we talk about Kobe Bryant, obviously, you know, accomplished so much, and you wrote a book about him, A Showboat, The Life of Kobe Bryant. So take us back as far as your relationship with him, Roland, and, you know, when was the first time you ever met Kobe Bryant?
The 90s scored his first NBA field goal in Charlotte.
Oh, okay.
He, of course, was a rookie. The night before that, or the night or two before that, he'd been in the Garden in New York and scored a free throw. He told reporters at the Garden that he was there to be the greatest basketball player of all time. And he was unabashed in that. Stone cold serious.
Uh-huh.
And after he hit that field goal in Charlotte, it was a three-pointer. After the game, he came bouncing into the locker room and hit me with a soul shake. he had no idea who I was. You know, just a guy there with a microphone and notepad. But I like to say he was eager to greet the world. And he started out that season filled with enthusiasm. I sat with him for a full 30 minutes, just he and I, in the locker room in Cleveland, the All-Star game, before he went out for the slam dunk contest. And we would have many, many talks over the coming years, particularly during his youthful years. And I introduced him to Tex Winter as well, and who became his coach, and who became his mentor before he became his coach. And so Kobe was a friend, a good friend. He, my daughter was 13 and playing AAU basketball at the time, and he wrote her a note. She's a mother today living in Boston.
Okay.
He wrote her a note telling her to stay true to her dreams. She, of course, went on to have a great high school career and played some college. And but she really identified with Kobe, and because she had, you know, she was this grinder. She had this over the moon work ethic. I mean, you know, Kobe was insane with his, and sometimes I questioned her as well, but she really identified with him. And even as a mother, she sort of followed Kobe and his daughter from afar as he coached her. That intrigued her, and had a real busy day Sunday doing interviews. And late at night, I was driving home, and I called her. I knew she'd been upset by everything, and I reminded her he was our guy, true for millions of people.
You're listening to The Voice, Roland Lazenby. He is an author, sports journalist, biographer, best-selling author of the book, Showboat, The Life of Kobe Bryant. It, you know, it's so interesting sharing, you know, his influence even on your daughter. But here, Kobe Bryant, an NBA icon that transcended his sport, share about, Roland, his lasting impact with this new generation of basketball players.
Oh, you know, well, he never cheated the game. I don't know anybody. You know, when I was doing the book, I ran into all the friends he had in high school. He had them up. You know, practice was never enough for him.
Mm-hmm.
He had them all up. Their parents thought they were crazy. They were, you know. These were kids in the Philly suburbs. They were getting up at 5 a.m., driving to the gym to do additional training in the morning.
Before, and
I mean, they faced a pretty tough schedule anyway. And Kobe was just, I often used to say, if we could bottle what he had as a culture, we'd be building condos on the moon now.
Yeah. author, sports journalist, biographer Roland Lazenby with us tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. So true. You know, Kobe Bryant, he traded dunks for storytelling. And one thing I would love for you to share, because there's so many highlights and it's hard to, you know, compact it all in this segment. But what can you share about as far as his championship mindset? I mean, you touched on that as far as him getting up at 3:45, 4 o'clock in the morning and shooting hoops, working on all facets of his game. But that Mamba mentality, where did that come from? And also talk a little bit about, throw in there as far as, you know, his dad's influence on his career.
Well, his father had tremendous ability. He was a Magic Johnson type player before Magic Johnson, and he had a lot of bounce to his game. He played at LaSalle for Paul Westhead. Kobe's father, of course, was Joe Bryant, Jelly Bean Giant, Bryant.
Uh-huh.
And he, you know, the saying in South Philly was, gotta be jelly because jam don't shake. And it was really about jelly bean shaking and baking. He was a big star on the playgrounds. And Fillion was, you know, the kind of player who drew crowds. And Kobe, of course, his father was part of the bomb squad with the Philadelphia 76ers in the mid-70s, that band of young players, World Be Free, who lacked a conscience and a clue, but just entertained the crowds, and Jelly Bean would have them howling because he was such a showboat. And they all were. Daryl Dawkins, all of them. It was sort of a, you know, they're very young. And just the 76ers were trying to become good again, and they had those guys on the bench. It was a different thing. And Kobe's father, though, lost his footing in the NBA and wound up in the Italian League right as Kobe was coming of age. And he used to ride the bus with his father, the team bus, going to a lot of the Italian League games. Kobe would love to get out in front of the crowds. He'd mop sweat off the floor and then do dribble routines and things. But one day he told his father and one of his Italian League teammates, I'm going to be better than both of you guys. And I think Kobe took the disrespect directed at his father. I think he felt that. He saw that eventually. The Italian crowds loved him. Jelly Bean could put on all kinds of shows for them. But and Kobe loved the show. He loved to show off. He loved to dunk. His early AAU coaches talked about what a show buddy was, how many times he would just lose the ball in games trying to go behind his back, between his legs as he was learning those things. But ultimately, the thing that defined him is he really wanted to win. And he had those showboat elements. They defined him even early with the Lakers because he was so young and so eager to dunk. He really became this guy who had been the one getting up at 4 a.m. in high school. He trained like a monster. His entire record is of a guy who left no task undone. He shirked no duty. And I think that's why one of the biggest reasons, probably the very biggest reason that we have this outpouring for Kobe Bryant, he was so driven. He worked so hard, and he would let nothing get in his way, and he was so uncompromising. And the fans in L.A. loved him for it. He had his flaws, obviously. He struggled. He went through hard times, but the one consistent through line in his career was that competitive integrity. and that tremendous drive.
Author, sports journalist, biographer, the life of Kobe Bryant, talking about his book, Showboat. Roland Lazenby has been with us tonight, SB Nation Radio. And it really is impossible just to comprehend, you know, what has taken place just over this past week, the loss of Kobe Bryant. And we just continue to extend our prayers to his family and to the other victims in that helicopter crash. And Roland, thank you so much for carving out some time. I know it's been very difficult, but we really appreciate you coming on to SB Nation Radio.
Thank you, E.
Absolutely.
Good to talk to you.
Absolutely. Blessings. Much more coming your way. SB Nation Radio. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, we've always got you covered on Friday nights. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Got to recognize the folks that make it happen right here during Super Bowl week. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. It is time for some PGA news and notes. We're ready to go inside the ropes and visit with former PGA Tour player. He is an author. He does it all. Larry Miller, golf.com. That's my guy. Hello, Larry.
Good evening. Into the golf season, full swing now. So, it's the best time of year, as far as I'm concerned. Football's coming to an end, and we can really get heavily into golf now.
Well, last week was a very big week in golf because Tiger Woods made his 2020 debut at Torrey Pines. So, Larry, what were your takeaways? Were they better than expected?
I thought he was very fresh and very much on point, especially, you know, for his first start of the year. He actually got, within two shots of the lead at one point, maybe a couple of times there in the third round. And in the fourth round, he crept up there within three, I believe. And so he was in contention, which is not surprising at Torrey Pines. It's practically his backyard golf course. He's won there so many times. But still, being the first start of the year, I thought he was very fresh and very ready. He looked good physically. I thought his swing looked really good. In fact, I even made the comment to a friend when we were watching. I said, you know, his swing kind of looks like it did back in the early 2000s. I mean, he was on plane all the way through the swing, and his tempo looked good. He wasn't dropping down so much like he was doing a couple of years ago. So anyway, I think it just speaks of great things to come this year for him. Given the way that he started off.
Well, of course, Tiger Woods, he was trying to set the PGA Tour record with his 83rd career victory. He really didn't get things going, you know, in that final round. He finished with a 70, tied for ninth, six shots behind the leader. You know, what, you know, going forward, as we look at the schedule on the PGA Tour, is there a tournament coming up that you really feel like he will be in, you know, one of those top three guys, he can be in contention to win?
Well, I think he's going to be in contention just about every time he tees it up if he stays healthy like he is right now. Augusta jumps out, of course, is the next one. That's his. That's also his backyard playground, maybe even more so than Torrey Pines because of the way it fits his particular game, the way he can shape the ball left and right and hit it, you know, long enough to get over those hills and take advantage of the roll. So that's why he's had so much success there, along with his stellar putting. You know, he goes around that course sometimes with no three putts, which is almost a circus act. I mean, it's just amazing feat. So that jumps out as anyway. He's that 83rd win is going to come soon this year. I think in the first few months of the year, he's going to win something and eclipse that record, and then from then on, it's a hunt for the majors.
It is Friday night, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We don't want to get too far into this interview without connecting with you. Join us at eRadio Sports Info, eradiosports.com, and podcastarena.com, our very special guest. He joins us each and every week. We love him. Larry Miller, former PGA Tour player, and his latest book that he has released, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental, What He Never Told the World, packed full of all kinds of great information. And Larry, tell us a little bit. Let's pause. Have you connect with the audience. What are they going to find when they go to your website?
Well, they're going to see an opportunity to have me take a look at videos of their golf swing from a couple of different angles with a few different clubs. And what I do is I'll figure out pretty quickly, analyze those videos and see what the faults are, how you can improve your technique. and then I'll tell you how to do it, and I'll give you drills to reinforce what I'm telling you, and I'll tell you it's going to be a great benefit to your golf swing and to your scoring. So if you want to improve your game, check it out on the website, and it'll tell you how to send the videos to me, and then we'll also have a lengthy telephone conversation about your game and about your swing. So it's a great way to start the season.
Well, let's recap and continue on the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey. Mark Leishman, ultimately, he rallies to win. He got off to such a great start when we think back to that round. He shot, what, a 31 on the front nine to seize control and then came up with three big par saves on the back. Finished, ultimately, with, what, a 65. So when you watched that, what do you think the key, what was working for him on Sunday afternoon?
Well, it was all about short game. It was all about putting, making putts, and getting it up and down. He only hit three fairways in the final round. But as I said in last week's show, you know, Torrey Pines fairways are very generous. You can get away with driving the ball, sideways, if you will, on that golf course. It's all about the approach shots, and then it's all about getting it up and down. Well, he was the best in the field last week in getting it up and down when he missed greens, and he made tons of putts. I think the only short putt he missed all week was that one on 17 there at the end when it really didn't. It almost mattered because John Rahm had a chance to eagle the last hole, although Rahm didn't know it at the time. But he was pretty comfortable coming in, and that short putt on 17 really didn't cost him, and it was the only one he missed. So, as quite frequently happens on the PGA Tour, the guy who makes the most putts and gets it up and down that week usually is the winner. It's not so much about hitting it long and straight. It's all about scoring. And, it's in golf, it's always been the low score wins. And, boy, how do you score? It's by short game. So that's why I urge all the kids that I work with to just work extra hard, spend extra hours from 100 yards in. And get really good at that.
Absolutely. And for Mark Leishman, this was his fifth career PGA Tour victory. We love him. He's an Aussie. He's from Australia. So have you followed his game very close? I mean, what is the one thing you've been highlighting, talking about? He was able to close out that win at Torrey Pines with his short game. But just overall, when you look at his body of work, why has he found success on the PGA Tour?
He's got a very strong game, typical of the Aussies. They, if you go back through the Greg Normans, of the world and the ones that followed him from Australia, those guys, they're all very aggressive players, very strong players. They're strong drivers of the ball. They all hit it long, and they just have an aggressive mentality. And I'll tell you something else about the Aussies too. They are renowned for being great bunker players. I don't know what it is, whether they practice it more than we do in the States, but they really are. They are all super bunker players. And so it takes a lot of pressure off your long game when you know that if you hit it in the bunker, you're probably going to get it up and down, or if you miss the green, you're going to chip it close. So anyway, I love the aggressive mentality of the Aussies and every one of them that you can name and go back and take a look at. They all play that way. They don't play conservatively. They're hard chargers.
Absolutely. They keep that hammer down. So in that final round, let's reflect on John Rahm. I mean, he's playing some very good golf right now. He shot a 70, but Larry, okay, listen, he got off to a bad start. He rebounded and delivered, with a strong finish. So talk to our listeners, for all the golf enthusiasts out there, the aficionados, like, when you start off a round of golf and it's not going the way you want it to, what is your self-talk? What do you need to do to muscle through that emotionally?
You can't panic. You have to rely on your fundamentals. And, you know, what I do when I was playing competitively a lot, and if I'd get over par quickly in the round, or maybe even two or three over par, what I would do is I would just focus on the next shot, trying to hit a quality shot. If you try to think ahead, and, you know, you start thinking, well, where are the par fives? You know, where can I make a birdie and get a shot back? You do that, you're going to keep making mistakes. What you have to do is focus on the very next shot. It seems trite and it seems simple, but it really is the profound way to go about it, and it's hard to do. It's easy to say that, but it's hard to do. Because when you get two or three over early in the round, you know, you start figuring out how you can get it back and where you can get it back. But that's not the point. The point is to hit a quality shot on the next shot. If you do that, what happens is you slip back into the groove, you get your tempo and timing back, and you probably can save the round if you just stay patient. So the key is to not panic, stay patient, and rely on the next shot and rely on basic fundamentals.
Well, tell me this. You know, what were your thoughts on the fact that John Rahm, he did not realize in the final hole he needed to eagle to force a playoff? I mean, do you blame John? Do you blame his caddy? And you're talking about staying in the moment, you know, not panicking. But when should you during a round be paying attention to the leaderboard and, you know what, I've got to get an eagle or I've got to get a birdie, I've got to par this last hole in order to go to a playoff or to maybe ultimately win?
Yeah, well, I don't understand. I mean, you come to the last hole of a tournament and you're right there at the top of the leaderboard or near it in contention, you've got to take a look and see what you need to do on the last hole, because at that point, you know, then it I mean, it's still one shot at a time, but it may result in you taking a more aggressive approach on your tee shot or on your approach shot, instead of maybe, you know, playing conservatively to the fairway. You might take the driver and try to bomb it down there where you have a short iron of the green, which sets up a potentially an easier birdie opportunity. So you really have to look at it. It almost becomes match play at the end like that. And for him not to realize that is pretty amazing, really. But then, you know, you look at his personality, kind of like Seve Ballesteros.
Oh, yes.
He's got that Spanish, that real fiery, you know, almost excitable demeanor about him. And maybe he just got caught up in all that so much and the excitement that he just, you know, all he was trying to do was hit good shots, and he sure did. If he'd hit that putt a little bit harder, it would have been interesting. It was going to scare the hole, for sure.
Well, John Rahm just got married, too, so maybe he'll mellow just a little bit, and he won't be so fiery.
Yeah.
You know how us ladies are. We've got a mellower man. So tell me.
Well, that's one way to put it.
There you go. Okay, so, Larry, when you were on the PGA Tour, did you watch the leaderboard? I mean, kind of what was your approach?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a leaderboard watcher. You know, I'm all ears and all eyes all over the place. And now I will say this. I developed early on a technique that I call being in your bubble. And so when it was my turn to play, I would enter this big, giant bubble that nothing could get into. No noise, nothing. No outside thoughts. And when I got into that bubble and it was my turn to play, I was just given 100% to that swing, that shot. But when I stepped out of that bubble, oh, yeah, I was looking all over to see who was doing what and whatever. That's just my nature. And, you know, some people tell me they don't know what they shot until they add the score up. Well, you know, I knew every stroke all the time, every round.
Okay.
What I was doing. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a bean counter for sure.
Just a few more minutes tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Always a fascinating interview, and we go inside the ropes, hanging out with former PGA Tour player Larry Miller. Okay, so Larry, one of your favorite players, you love Jordan Spieth, and for the first time, he has fallen out of the top 50. Is he in trouble?
He is. He is in trouble because he's searching for his golf swing. He's been searching for over a year now, more than a year, and he hasn't found it yet, apparently. He's having good rounds. He's having flashes. But he's not putting four together. He's not stringing out the good rounds. He's throwing a 73 or 4 in there every time, even though he'll shoot a good round or two. And it's because he's struggling with his swing. His swing is just not consistently on the mark. You know, he'll have one week where he's not driving it well. We've been doing that for a while. But then the next week he'll drive it better, but his irons are off. And his swing is a little bit in trouble. And, well, I've been saying this ever since my Hogan book came out. I think Spieth needs to, in my opinion, I think he needs to make a couple of adjustments in his golf swing that will give him more consistency with it. I hope he finds it, and I wish he would ask me.
Our PGA News and Notes continues with Larry Miller after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour one, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, let's go back inside the ropes with Larry Miller. That's right, his agent. He just needs to go to LarryMillerGolf.com, right? You can provide some really good insight and answers. Okay, so our time is running down. Talk to me about, as far as the PGA Tour, it made its way to Scottsdale, Arizona for the Waste Management Phoenix Phoenix Open at TPC Scottsdale Stadium. It is underway, and I know this is your favorite event of the year, right? You love that party atmosphere. It's Miller time, right?
Oh, it's the Ringling Brothers, you know. It's a circus.
Yeah,
it is a circus, and it's complete with costumes and revelry and everything else, the hooting and hollering, and I think it's great. Now, I wouldn't want to see that every week, because then it would be a Ringling Brothers tour, but I think once a year or so, I love it. I think it's great, and I think the players really love it, too. Just take a look at the field of who's in it and who's playing, and these guys love that. And when they come to that 16th hole, I mean, you can just see, you know, they just light up, and they're just trying as hard as they can to hit a great shot for that crowd.
So you think the party atmosphere, it is good for the game of golf to maybe have that one off weekend, I suppose, and let the fans just kind of, you know, let it all out there?
Absolutely. It takes some of the stiffness, you know, away from the game that some of the players today are kind of like robots, you know, they devoid of emotion and personality. And then all this stuff comes out this week for this tournament, and I think it humanizes the players more to the fans and makes the game fun, and I'm all for it. I'd like to see it at least a couple of three times a year. I think it'd be great.
Well, there's some wonderful competitors, Xander Schauffele, Matt Kuchar, Victor Hovland. Who you got? Larry, who you think is going to win?
Well, Gary Woodland loves that course. He's got good vibes there. Ricky Fowler finally came through last year after a couple of near misses. He's going to be there. McIlroy is playing so well right now. You've got John Rahm, who's hot as a firecracker. You can take your pick of those four. I mean, any of those guys would be a great bet. I'm going with McIlroy this week. I think he's going to have a really good week.
And the guy I can always bet on is Larry Miller, providing some wonderful information and insight each and every week at the Next Generation of Sports Radio. That is SB Nation Radio. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Look forward to another conversation next week. Thank you, Dr. Miller.
Great. See you next week, everybody. Have fun.
Absolutely. Come on back. SB Nation Radio.